Hello and welcome to the Parish Podcast. The sermon you're about to hear was delivered at the Parish in Alpharetta, Georgia, and is meant to be heard within the context of our local church community. So, if you've never been to the Parish, you're missing a really big piece of the puzzle. We'd love to welcome you to join us anytime, and you can find more information or contact us by visiting our website at parishanglican.org.
We are going to spend the next 8 weeks going through what we're calling the story of God. The entire story from Genesis all the way to Revelation. We're not doing all of it today, okay? So breathe easy. We're only going to go through the first three chapters of the book of Genesis. But it's really, really critical that we understand the story of God. And the reason why we're taking this time out in the midst of our year to study this entire story is because stories are powerful things. And the stories that we believe matter. Stories are really powerful things. And the stories that we believe matter. We learned this over the last few weeks with the news headlines about our wonderful American hero, Ryan Lochte. Okay, everybody know that story? What we found throughout that process was that what started with a tiny little story that just kind of deviated a little bit from the truth and only went to one or two people grew and grew and grew. And as you and I all know, probably from when you were a teenager, that when you tell a lie that grows to that point, the most dangerous thing you can do is actually begin to believe that the lie is true. Because once you tell yourself a story over and over and over and over again, even if it's not true, you begin to believe it. And when you do, that's when you end up in a really dangerous place, like on the Today Show, telling that story to the rest of the world. And dangerous and painful consequences can happen. The stories that we believe matter. And whether you know it or not, you're being told stories all day, every day. There are stories that are being breathed and spoken into you without you thinking about it. When you leave here today, you'll pull out to Highway 9 and you'll turn left or right, but no matter what you do, you'll look across the street and see a Ferrari dealership, which is amazing. I love it. No matter where we end up as a church 10 years from now, we'll always tell the story of how we were across the street from a Ferrari dealership. But when you do that, don't just see a Ferrari dealership. And there's nothing wrong with a Ferrari. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is if we're not careful, there's a subtle message that can slip under the radar that comes from those places and countless other places that we visit in our world around here. And it's the story of materialism, that the things that we buy will make us happy, that the things that we can supply ourselves with our own resources will take care and meet our needs. Those stories seep into you through television, through everything you see day after day. And if you believe them, they end in dangerous and painful consequences. Then we get home and we pull into our garage, if you have a garage, and you shut the garage door, and that begins the story of isolationism, which says, this is my world and my home, and I don't really need to be connected to anybody. I can make it on my own, is the story of isolationism. And when we believe that over and over and over again, dangerous and painful consequences result. That's why it's so important that we understand what the Bible is really all about. Because the Bible itself, this incredible book that's been inspired and breathed into by the Spirit of God, that carries with it the authority of God, the Trinity himself, the Bible, we have kind of taken it and boiled it down to where we begin to look at the Bible as a rule book or an instruction manual or an encyclopedia. A place where if we have a problem, we can flip it open and we can find the right kind of verse, kind of like Harry Potter. Like we find the right spell, we say the right things, and we can take care of something. Now, don't misunderstand me. There is amazing truth and wisdom, unparalleled wisdom, and incredible responses to the problems that we face in our lives that you will find in the Bible that you will not find anywhere else. But first and foremost, the Bible is not an answer book. The Bible is not an instruction manual. The Bible is not a spell book. The Bible is a story. First and foremost, it's a story. It's the story of God. And if we're going to understand the wisdom and the truth and the answers that we find within it, we have to first understand the breadth of God's great story. G.K. Chesterton, one of my favorite authors, once said, I had always felt that that life was first a story. And if life was a story, there's a storyteller. If life that we're caught up in feels like a story, then there must be a storyteller. And that's the value, first and foremost, that we see in the scriptures. It reveals to us the story of God. Now, for many of us, the problem is that the story of God has gotten broken down. And what we understand is a very small snippet of what is actually God's big story. About 7 or 8 years ago, my wife and I got really into the series Lost Television. Anybody else get into Lost? Yes? We'll never get those hours of our life back, right? Like, that'll never come back to us after that finale. Woo, thank you for that one. But we got way into Lost. We were a few seasons behind. So we were, you know, watching season 1 and 2 while everybody else was on to season 4, season 5. And so we finally got to season 3, and we're just digging into it, loving it. On television, they're broadcasting season 6, but we're trying to avoid it. And I get home one night, and my wife is watching the current episode of Lost. Season 6, no context, totally missed out on seasons 4 and 5, but she's just digging into season 6. Okay, time out. If you have a movie that you haven't seen and you're interested in seeing it, don't talk to my wife about it, okay? She is a spoiler alert. She loves it. She loves the look on people's faces when she ruins the ending of a movie. I'm serious. So that's enough for that. So she's sitting there watching season 6, and I'm going, what are you doing? You're messing this whole thing up. You can't just jump to the end and watch. And so as I'm standing there, I remember standing in my living room and seeing it and going, I don't even know who these people are. I don't know who these characters are. I've never met them before. And there was the Dharma Initiative. Do you remember the Dharma Initiative? We still don't know what the Dharma Initiative was, but I was completely lost into what the Dharma Initiative was because we missed out on important context of what the story was all about. And it's kind of like when you go to a movie and you pay $10 to $50 or whatever you have to pay for a movie, and someone walks in 45 minutes late. Have you experienced this? You look over next to you and somebody walks in 45 minutes late and they're completely content to just sit there and watch the movie. And you think, what are you doing? You've spent all this money and you've completely missed it. You've missed the plot because you're only catching a small portion of what the story is really about. And without knowing it, many of us, that's what's happened with the story of God. Because we have boiled it down and believe that the entirety of the story of God goes like this. My sin plus Jesus' blood equals heaven. That's the story of God. My sin plus Jesus' blood equals heaven. What's the gospel? What's the story of God? It's that my sin plus Jesus' blood equals heaven. We call it the gospel. Jesus died, I believe, we're all good. Note, one thing that's very interesting about this is what begins the story of this portion of the gospel is my sin. It starts with me. It starts with what I've done. It starts with my life. And this little snippet, without knowing it, we've taken it and we've removed it out of the larger story of the story of God. And so we don't know what's really happening. We don't know the full weight of the impact of what this portion of the story really means. This is the most important part of the story of God. It's the climax of the story. But if this is all we know, then we're just catching season 6. And we've not caught any of the chapters that lead up to this moment. In fact, we can't fully understand Jesus until we understand the great story of God. We can't. We can know every Bible story. We can know all the little parables that Jesus teaches. But we can't truly know Jesus until we understand the great story of God. So we're going to spend 8 weeks talking about this from Genesis to Revelation. And then every other week, we're going to spend some time talking about it after church. So if you don't have kids running around and you can join us, then come and ask questions and let's dig into this and wrestle with it. Today, we open the book and we begin with the very first words on the very first chapter, on the very first page. And Christy read it for us. It starts with these 4 words. In the beginning, God. Not in the beginning, me. Not in the beginning, my sin. Not in the beginning, my problems. Do you see the difference? When we back up and we understand the entire story of God, it instantly tells us in 4 words, I am not the main character of this story. You are not the main character of this story. Our church is not the main character of this story. God is forever and ever the main character and the most important part of the story of God. It all starts with him. It all happens because of him. And it will all end with him one day. And then in the creation story, as it unfolds, and Christy read it, through that entire chapter, we see piece by piece that God beautifully, meticulously creates every single living thing. Everything that we see, God places it here intentionally. And then on the sixth day, he does something different. He says, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness. Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness. What in the world does that mean? What does it mean that God created humanity in the image of God? You may have heard that a lot. You may have heard people talk about that quite a bit. We can view it through a lot of different lenses, but I think most scholars agree that there's two big primary lenses through which we can view what that really means that's very, very helpful for us. First of all, in the story of creation, from the beginning when God speaks, let there be light, until the moment where God creates humanity, he's not just throwing things out randomly. He's not just kind of making things up as he goes along. He is meticulously building something. And many scholars, having studied a lot of the ancient Near Eastern texts, believe that what he's building is a temple. If you study a lot of the religions in that area that surrounded the Hebrew people, what you'll find is their creation stories began with a God building a temple. But this God is different. This God doesn't show up on earth and build a physical temple. This God is the true God that begins from nothing and creates the universe, not to put a temple inside of it, but he creates the universe as his temple. And brick by brick, creation by creation, light, sun, moon, sea, sky, stars, fish, he's building this giant cosmic temple that points worship and praise back to him. And what happens when you build a temple? You place something inside of it. A few months ago, as part of one of my seminary courses, I went to a Hindu temple that was really close to my house. I had no idea that there was a Hindu temple very close to my house, but there was. And inside that Hindu temple, it was very simple, very plain, but there was this giant stone statue of their god, Ganesh. This giant stone elephant statue. And in the midst of this very plain room, there's this thing that in their minds directs attention to what we know is not a true God, Ganesh. And in the same way, but in the truth of God's creation, the fact that he is the one true and only God, God creates his temple and then places something inside it to bring worship and honor and praise to the one that made it. He creates humanity. He creates you and I. He creates Adam and he creates Eve and he places them inside his temple as his icons, his image. That when people look at humanity, they can't help but worship God. That everything that God gives us in that moment is the responsibility to reflect praise to God, to draw it in and reflect it to God, to bring honor and worship. We were created to reflect worship to God. And then there's more. In Genesis 1:28, God looks at these people that he's created and he says, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Rule over everything that I've made. We weren't just created to reflect worship to God. We were created to rule in God's kingdom, to carry out his rule on the earth. Another thing that would have been very easy to understand for people who read this in the century when it was written is that in that day and age, rulers would be hundreds of miles away. Emperors, kings, pharaohs, they'd be hundreds of miles away and they would never visit the town. There was no Air Force One back then. They would never make visits to your town. So instead of that, they would create these stone statues of the ruler and they would place them in the most visible place in the city, as a message to say to the entire city, you're not on your own. You're not under your own authority. You're under the authority of this ruler. And so when God points to his creatures, he points to man and woman and he says, you are created to rule over all the creation that I've given you. He's saying, just as you're my image called to reflect worship to me, you're my image called to rule in the way that I would rule in my loving kingdom. And look at the way that God's rule unfolds in that first chapter. It's good, it's creative, it's beautiful. It's not destructive or vindictive. Walter Brueggemann says that the intent of that rule here is to be a shepherd king, to lovingly guide creation down the path that God intended for it. So, who are we according to the creation story? We are, as humans, reflectors and rulers. We're called to reflect God's praise back to him, to take everything in this world and point it to God in praise. And we're called to rule, to carry out his loving rule and authority on this earth. But what happened? We didn't read the next portion of the story, but it's critically important. In Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve don't choose to reflect and don't choose to rule. They choose rebellion. Rebellion. It's mankind choosing to rule in our own way instead of God, not ruling underneath God, not ruling as a representative of God's kingdom, but to rule in our own way instead of God. And it may seem like a tiny little thing to take a bite of an apple that God said not to eat, but in that one small moment of rebellion, the earth shifted off of its axis. This was a seismic shift in the course of creation. And in doing so, in that one moment, humanity forever gave up their role as priests and kings, as reflectors and rulers. And in doing so, had to leave the safety of the garden. In that moment, humans stepped out of the safety of the kingdom of God and entered into the kingdom of man. And what did they enter into? It gets very violent very fast. Adam and Eve leave the garden and they have to move eastward. And a little tidbit, thanks to John, dropping this one in. I didn't know this one, but anywhere in those early books in the Old Testament, anyone who moves east, it's a metaphor, a reflection for moving away from God, from separation, from his loving presence. So Adam and Eve leave the garden and they move eastward, and their sons, Cain and Abel, immediately begin this legacy of violence where Cain kills his own brother. How do we go from a place where God creates us in the midst of this incredible temple to reflect God's worship and instill his rule to a place where children are destroying one another? It's because of the effects of this rebellion from the fall. It's separation from God. And Genesis 3 says that Cain has to leave and go east of Eden. He has to further separate from God's presence. And what we learn through these first three chapters is that east of Eden, things are not as they should be. Whenever we're east of Eden, whenever we're outside of the kingdom of God, things are not as they should be. So we've only discussed three chapters in the book of Genesis, and we've covered some incredibly important moments in the story of God. First, creation, that God made humans to reflect his praise and rule his world. And secondly, in the fall, in our rebellion, that things are not as they should be. But why does that matter today? Sure, that's a great story from long ago. It's something we can reach back to and remember and teach our kids. But why does it matter today? Because we live in a world that is still shattered from the effects of that one decision. And we live in a world where we're still east of Eden and things are still not as they should be. I was going to show this picture, but I know that there's kids in the room, and I know that, you know, there's certain things that you should and shouldn't see, but I don't know if you saw a few weeks ago, there was a picture circulating in the news of a little boy named Omran. Did you see the picture of Omran? He was from Syria, caught up in the Syrian crisis. Just will break your heart to see this little boy who didn't ask for it, who didn't willingly walk in and choose war and choose this kind of strife and this kind of bloodshed, but who's losing members of his family and is sitting there covered in dirt, covered in the effects of the bombings of this terrible campaign. And when I look at that picture, what I see is the effects of what we talked about today, that things are not as they should be. And the danger for us, if we believe the wrong story about the story of God, if we believe the wrong stories about the world, we're tempted when we see things like that to just say, I can't really deal with that right now. I'm just going to put that away. Or what's even worse, and what I'm tempted to do, is to look at it and say, man, it's just, that's the way it is. Things happen. We're in a difficult time and bad things happen. What will be, que sera, sera, it is what it is. What today teaches us is that message is not the story of God. Looking at the difficulties and the pain and the brokenness of this world and that you experience in your life, God doesn't want you to simply look at it and shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, that is what it is. No, we're called to look at it and look through the lens of God's story and say, no, it's not okay. This is not what God intended. Things are not as they should be. And the beauty of God's story is that it continues, that it's not over yet. And even in the midst of this difficult brokenness, this moment that would have broken God's heart, that his own creation had chosen to disagree and to rebel from his rule, we see the grace of God. Because in Genesis chapter 3, God, knowing that Adam and Eve had left his rule, knowing that they had rebelled, knowing exactly what they had done, calls out to them in the garden and says, where are you? Where are you? And he knows that they're hiding, and he knows that they're ashamed, and they've covered themselves with these little makeshift fig leaf garments, and he draws them out of hiding. And even after explaining the consequences of what's happened and the shift that's happened in creation, God, the Father, the creator of every living thing, sacrifices an animal and spills its blood to take skin and cover over the nakedness and the shame of Adam and Eve. God, who created this animal, who lovingly created it to be a part of his temple, spills its blood and takes that skin and by hand weaves a garment to cover the shame of humanity. And in that one little moment, we catch a glimmer and a glimpse of what we will see will come true. That God will one day make a sacrifice with shed blood to cover the shame, to bring us out of hiding, to draw us into his loving heart and to remind us that even though things are not as they should be, that we're not stuck here and that he is lovingly moving towards us in his grace. If you would bow your heads with me, I'd love for us to finish our time together as we move towards communion with a moment of prayer. And we're going to pray a prayer of confession. And so before we do this, I just want to ask you just for a moment to just reflect and ask the Holy Spirit to speak into your heart right now. What is the rebellion that you're carrying today? We've all got it, all of us. We're all carrying something. Something deeply embedded within our hearts. Some kind of rebellion where we're choosing to live in our path and in our own way. And for some of you, that comes very quickly to mind. And for some of us, it may be very subtle, but the roots run very deep. What is the place that we have chosen rebellion instead of reflecting and ruling in God's loving kingdom? Allow the Lord to just speak that to your heart.